do? Daniel replied, You don't need any backup. Don't let him bother you, man. You do a good job and don't have shit to worry about. Yeah, well, that's easy for you to say. You don't have a wife and kids, Tom replied, as he pulled a Butterfinger from the little tray in the machine. No worries, man. I'll see you tomorrow. Daniel quickly went to his desk and gathered his stuff, making his way to the elevator before Malcolm could change his mind. A light rain fell as he pulled out of the garage, low-hanging clouds adding to the dismal afternoon. Rain anywhere near quitting time meant the already bad traffic was going to be even worse. Daniel let out a long breath, reached up, and hit the button on the stereo for the CD, and soon, The Devil Went Down to Georgia filled the van. Traffic was crawling along when Daniel noticed one of those big flashing construction signs on the side of the road. Be prepared to stop, flashed over and over. Just freaking great, he thought, as he slapped the wheel with both hands. Daniel leaned around to try and see the accident that must be ahead. There were certainly enough flashing lights up there. As he inched forward, the lanes became separated by orange construction cones. Daniel craned his neck more, trying to see. Slapping himself on the forehead, he looked down at the Cobra CB hanging under the dash, then reached down and turned it on. Channel 19 was crowded with truckers talking about the jam. Then he heard one of them say it was a roadblock, that the police were stopping everyone and checking IDs. Another trucker said some people were being pulled off to the side of the road and dogs were going around the cars. I don't know what them some bitches is looking for, but they got traffic all fucked up. Tell me about it. I gotta be in Nashville by 7 a.m. These assholes has got the whole damn city jacked up. The talk continued along the same course. Daniel could finally see all the cops up ahead. They were standing between the lanes, yellow rain slickers, orange cones on their flashlights, and all. Daniel finally made it to the first of the officers, who did not look happy. With rain dripping from the brim of his Smokey the Bear hat, he rolled his finger in the air. Daniel got the hint and rolled the window down about 3 inches. Roll it all the way down. Daniel rolled it down some more, about halfway. The officer took a step closer and shined the flashlight in, looking around. Let me see your ID. The soaked officer practically spat. What's going on? Daniel asked. He was actually curious. I said give me your ID. No offense, and I'm not trying to be a hard ass, but do I have to? Have I done anything wrong? A look of disgust spilled across the cop's face as he slowly shook his head. Reaching inside his slicker, he pulled the mic for his radio out and keyed it. Non-compliant in the number one, green van. Hey, I'm not looking. He was quickly cut off. Daniel wasn't expecting this. He just asked a question. A ticket for reckless driving and several $100 for an attorney had taught him a couple of things. Well, he thought it had. Pull over there, the officer stated flatly, pointing with his flashlight. Shit, he muttered under his breath as he pulled out of the travel lane and onto the shoulder where several additional unhappy and wet cops were now waiting on him. Before he even stopped, they were already on both sides of the van. Instead of talking to him through the window, the officer on the driver's side simply opened the door and ordered him out. At the same time, an officer on the passenger side opened that door. Shut the vehicle off and step out, sir. The officer, now standing in the open door, said, Easy, guys. I just asked if I had to give him my ID. I'm not doing anything wrong. Is there any reason to suspect that I have done anything wrong? Sir, I asked you to step out. Are you going to step out and allow me to look in your vehicle? Now other officers were coming up. Do I have to? All I did was ask a question. Can you answer my question? Sir, I asked you politely. Now I'm telling you to step out, or I'm going to take you out. From the other side of the van, other officers joined in. Make it easy, buddy. Just step out and let us do our job. If everything is okay, you'll be on your way. You still haven't answered my question. Can you answer my question? You say you're asking me to, and if I don't, you're going to take me out. Am I under arrest? The situation was getting out of hand as additional officers had converged on the scene. Daniel was beginning to doubt even asking the damn question. He wasn't against the cops, but he knew he had rights. The officers now surrounding the van, though, had a completely different opinion of the situation. No, you are not under arrest, but you will be if you don't step out and give me your ID. Just make it easy. Just step out. Quit being an ass. Get out of the van, another officer screamed. Are you ordering me out? Daniel asked the officer in his door. Yes, I am ordering you out of the van. Okay, I'm going to undo the seatbelt and I'll get out. Daniel clicked the button and pulled the belt from around him and stepped out. He was immediately grabbed and shoved against the hood of the van. This surprised him, as he expected them to throw him on the ground in the mud. The officers were talking amongst themselves as they patted him down and cuffed him. As he leaned over the hood, he saw one of the officers on the passenger side lean in the open door. At the same time, the officer cuffing him spun him around. I do not consent to a search of my van. The cop shot him a look of pure annoyance. Billy, the officer that was beginning to search the van, straightened up, looking at the other officer, who shook his head slightly. As the officer was going through Daniel's wallet for his ID, he asked, What are you trying to hide? Nothing. I haven't done anything wrong, and you can't just search me. If you haven't done anything wrong, what are you worried about? The officer pulled out the license from the wallet, then took another card out and held it up for the other officer to see. You have a concealed handgun license? Do you have any weapons in the van? No, I don't have any now. Sold them all right before the last ban was passed. Technically, he wasn't lying. He didn't have anything with him at the moment. If I had a dollar for every time I heard that recently, you know it is now illegal to possess most firearms. I do, so I made a quick buck. Wasn't against the law at the time. The officer wasn't amused. He had handed Daniel's ID off to another officer who had probably stepped away to run it. They stood in the rain for several minutes. While they waited, Daniel asked, What's this all about? It's just the brave new world. If I didn't have to deal with so many people like you, it would all go a lot faster. Daniel shook his head to knock some of the rain off. Would you consent to a search? With a smug smile, the officer replied, That's not going to happen. See, I'm on the winning team. Daniel didn't reply. The statement stunned him. He thought about conversations he had had up in the woods before the old man died about the us and them mentality, and now he was staring it straight in the face. The officer returned and handed the ID back to the officer, talking to Daniel. He's clean. Turn around, he said. And then the officer started to unlock the cuffs. Next time, it would be in your best interest to just go along with the program. Just think, you wouldn't be all wet now if you had just showed your ID to begin with. Daniel turned to face the officer, rubbing his wrists. Am I free to go? Yes, sir, you are free to go, for now. Daniel didn't waste any time getting into the van and heading home. Though, for the remainder of the ride, all he could think about was the last two words the cop said, for now. His phone chimed. He saw it was Malcolm and did not feel like hearing from him. Malcolm was rather liberal, and a I told you so was not going to improve his mood. Daniel made it home and fell into his sofa with a groan of relief. It had been a long day, and finally, being home took a load off his mind. He craned his neck looking back over his shoulder at the fridge. There was a six-pack of woodchuck cider in there, and he wanted it. Just didn't feel like getting up. But it damn sure wasn't coming to him. With a grunt, Daniel heaved himself off the sofa and went to the fridge. His phone was sitting on the kitchen island, vibrating. He ignored it. He brought the whole six-pack back to the sofa, not wanting to have to get up again. He fell into the sofa finally. Flipping on the TV, he scanned the news networks. It was more of the same. More riots, more shooting, and more of people getting pissed off. He stopped on MSNBC when he saw an update of the Lansing incident, where even the crawler at the bottom of the screen called it that. Another of the Michigan troopers shot during the firefight had died. They were showing a tape from earlier in the day of the governor of the state giving a press conference. He was ranting about the people involved and how they would be brought to justice, and about how what had occurred was an act of domestic terrorism. The governor went on to say that he had been in talks with the president earlier in the day and that the Michigan militia has been officially designated a terrorist organization. This designation allowed for the use of federal assets and tracking them down. Daniel just shook his head. He wasn't a fan of what happened. No one in their right mind would be. But he could understand the mindset of those that thought that way. Opening his second cider, he flipped the TV over to the Xbox. A little time in the world of Battlefield would take his mind off this crap. Before the game even loaded, his phone started ringing. The caller ID showed it was Malcolm calling again. "Not tonight," he thought, as he returned the phone to its cradle. Dinner never entered his mind as Daniel played video games, getting his ass handed to him by 8-year-old kids. He was taking a break to go dig around in the fridge when he picked up his cell phone and saw all the messages. There were 19 new emails, all of them with the little urgent sign attached. He was trying to decide if he was even going to look at them when the phone rang. Malcolm again. Shaking his head, he reluctantly answered the call. "What's up, Malcolm?"
"Daniel, where the hell have you been? I've been trying for hours to get in touch with you."
"Been busy, man. What's up?"
"I need you to come in. There's a serious problem on the network."
"Dude, it's dark. You know we can't travel after dark." A thin smile cut his lips.
"I know. Do you know Robert Thomas?"
"Yeah, I know Bob. Isn't he the head of physical security?"
Daniel could almost feel the agitation through the phone.
"Yes, Robert is the head of physical security. He's going to be in touch with you and will send you a pass that will allow you to travel. We have the permission from the SEC to do what we need in order to deal with the situation."
"What the hell's going on? I thought we had it under control when I left."
"Well, it would appear we didn't. I need you to come in. Robert will be in touch shortly with the instructions. I'll see you soon."
The line went dead, and Daniel dropped the phone on the counter.
"This is bullshit." Daniel figured while he waited, he could watch a little more news, and he started to scan the news channels. It was just more bad news. Most major cities were having almost non-stop riots of some sort or another. It was getting ugly. It was as if something major happened, something nationwide. Cities all over the country were now in turmoil. Having seen enough of this in the last few days, he pulled up the guide to find something else to watch, deciding Big Bang Theory would make a nice distraction. It wasn't long before the phone rang, and Daniel hoped it would be Malcolm, telling him he didn't have to come in. The number displayed on the caller ID was from the bank, just not from Malcolm.
"Hello?"
"Daniel, this is Bob Thomas. I just emailed you a form you need to print out and keep with you on your way in. My cell number is with it. If you have any trouble, call me immediately."
Bob's gravelly voice filled the speaker. Daniel could almost smell the cigarette smoke.
"Sure thing. What the hell's going on up there?"
"I have no idea. That's why we need you. Malcolm is about to shit himself. Pack a bag, too. You may be here a while.
What the hell do you mean, pack a bag? I'm not sleeping in my cubicle.
You won't have to. We have facilities here. Things are getting shady around here and all over the metro, and it may be hard to get out once you get in. Better safe than sorry.
Daniel sat up on the edge of the couch. What do you mean, facilities?
You'll see when you get here. Bob paused for a moment. Have you got any guns?
Daniel pulled the phone from his head. He did indeed have a couple left, but wasn't about to admit that to anyone, especially over the phone.
No, Bob, I sold all mine before the ban.
A chuckle came from the other end.
Yeah, me too. Damn shame, really. But if I had any, I'd bring him with me today. Just remember, if you get stopped at all, call me immediately. And call me when you get to the parking garage so I can let you in. See you soon.
All right.
See you soon.
The line went dead. Daniel sat there for a moment, looking at Sheldon on the TV, 100 thoughts running through his head. Jumping up from the sofa, he headed for the closet where all his gear was. Standing in the open door, he looked at everything, trying to decide what he would take. In the end, he decided to take most of it. After all, he wasn't going to have to carry it. It would all be in the van. He was nervous as he backed out of his parking spot in the garage at the apartments. It was dark now, officially a time that was prohibited for being on the road. As he pulled out, his headlights revealed an empty road for as far as he could see. It was weird and nice at the same time. No traffic. Daniel pulled up an old Creed album on his iPod and plugged it into the stereo. Human Clay was playing when he approached his first APD roadblock. Without looking over, he reached into the passenger seat and patted the sheet of paper he had printed out just a short time ago. The officers waved him to a stop, making their point with their ARs they held to their shoulders. Daniel rolled to a stop, making sure to keep his hands on the steering wheel. The officers shouted orders as they approached. They seemed particularly on edge, and Daniel wasn't about to mess around, knowing if he did, he would wind up in the morgue. The officers separated as they approached, one on either side. The officer that approached his side was a young guy around his age. The other one was older. If age were an indicator, he would be the more experienced, though the younger one was issuing all the commands.
Keep your hands where I can see them and roll down your window.
Daniel immediately rolled the glass down, keeping his other hand on the wheel. The young officer stepped up.
What are you doing out here? You should know there's a curfew.
More of an accusation than a question.
I work for one of the banks downtown, and I've been called in to assist with a problem. I have a pass here from your department that gives me permission.
The younger officer pulled the door open.
Get out!
Daniel complied. As he climbed out, the older officer asked,
Where's the form?
On the passenger seat, he indicated with a nod of his head.
Out! Hands on the hood!
The younger officer shouted as the older one went into the passenger side and retrieved the sheet lying there. As Daniel put his hands on the hood, the young officer buried the muzzle of the carbine in his back.
Do not move! Understand me?
Daniel simply nodded his head in reply. He was kicking himself in the ass for not calling Bob. It just slipped his mind. But he could suddenly, very clearly, remember him saying it.
Hey, Jimmy, get his ID,
the older officer called out as he walked around the front of the van. He slung his rifle over his shoulder. The younger officer pulled Daniel's wallet out and tossed it to the older one and continued to pat him down.
Jim, this looks legit. I'm going to call it in and see,
the older officer said.
Whatever, I'll keep an eye on him here. What the hell do you do for the bank that makes you so special?
Without looking up, Daniel answered, I do network security.
Oh yeah? Big bad hackers gotta be stopped, huh? Give me a break. All the shit going on, and you're worried about some kids trying to hack into your network? The younger officer taunted.
I didn't want to come in. Believe me, not my choice.
Leave him alone, Jim. He works for the bank that our paychecks are written on. He checks out.
You must be damn important for the SEC to request you personally, the older officer said.
I'm not, but I guess my boss knows someone, Daniel replied.
All right, go on. Don't make any pit stops and be careful. Things are getting a little hairy over the direction you're going, the older officer said.
Daniel quickly got back in the van and started it. The officers stepped apart, and he pulled between them. The younger of the two still had a look of contempt on his face. He wanted to give the guy the finger, but thought better of it. The rest of the ride to the office was uneventful for the most part. The closer he got to the bank, the more people he started to see. Usually, only fleeting glances as they darted in and out of shadows. Once, he got a clear view of two men who were both wearing the mask from the movie V for Vendetta. Now he really wished his Glock were close enough to get to. As he rounded the corner to the bank, he was surprised to see large roll-up doors closing off the entrance to the parking garage. He stopped in front of one of them, just staring at it. Where in the hell did that come from? His cell phone suddenly rang, causing him to jump in his seat. At the same time, the door started to open.
Hello? I told you to call me when you got here. I also told you to call me if you had any trouble, neither of which you did.
Bob growled into the phone. He then continued, pull through the gate to the underground lot and stop in front of the big roll-up door that will be in front of you as you come down the ramp. When the door opens, drive through it and wait for me.
Okay,
Daniel replied as the line went dead. He looked at his phone.
Asshole hung up on me again.
Normally, the drive to the lower underground portion of the parking structure was blocked by one of those little arms that is raised up and down. Pulling through the gate, he saw the arm was up, and he hooked a right and drove through it as the gate began to lower behind him. He had never been down in this part of the building before. As with any large modern building, everyone had a prox card for the hundreds of readers located all over it. Access was controlled through permissions, and his certainly didn't have permission to access this part of the building. The gate at the bottom of the ramp was already going up as he descended. By the time he got to it, there was enough room for him to pull through. It immediately began to lower as soon as he cleared it. A short, chunky man in a gray work shirt and charcoal-colored pants was standing in an open door waving at him. Daniel looked around at the massive machinery inhabiting the cavernous space under the building. Most people that work in office buildings have no idea of the myriad of systems required to support it. They go through their day completely oblivious to them until a door won't open, or the air in their office is too cold, hot, or in between. Daniel got out of the van, slung his pack over his shoulder, and headed for the open door. Getting close enough to the man in the door to see him, Daniel read the name tag sewn to the breast of his shirt, Eugene. In the pocket on the other side protruding an amazing array of items, pens, pencils, screwdrivers, and even a little thermometer.
You Daniel?
The man asked in a nasally voice.
Yep, that's me.
Let's go up and see Bob before you head off to do whatever it is you're here to do.
Daniel followed Eugene into an enormous elevator.
Not like the ones you're used to, huh?
Eugene asked. Before the doors closed, he pressed the button for 15. Daniel looked around as the two big doors came together. From the diamond plate on the floor to what looked like moving blankets hanging on the walls, it certainly was not.
No, the ones in the lobby don't look anything like this, he said, as the car started to lift.
Guess not. Gopher Farm folks wouldn't really like having to ride to work in one of these, Eugene replied.
Daniel watched him as he spoke, noticing he couldn't see the man's mouth that was hidden behind an enormous mustache, just the bristles moving as he spoke. He had to pretend to look around the car as the image of Wilford Brimley came to mind. They could be brothers. Nothing more was said on the ride up. The car stopped, the doors opened, and Daniel followed Eugene out into a nondescript hallway. Unlike the parts of the building Daniel was familiar with, no pictures adorned the walls, no artwork occupied the corners, and there were no tables with flower arrangements. At the end of the hall was a single door. Eugene pulled his Prox card down. It was attached to a small, retractable reel clipped to the already overburdened pocket. As he waved it at the reader, a beep was followed by a green light, and the door clicked open. As Daniel passed the reader, he raised his right hip. He kept his card clipped there, where it was tall enough to hit the readers. Instead of the chirpy beep, he got a lower, grating sound and a red light. He didn't have permission to enter the door. They entered a large, dark room. To their right was a big console with the wall above it, covered with flat-screen monitors. Each of the screens was subdivided into a grid with a different camera view in each one, 16 views per monitor. A large monitor in the center of the wall had a 3D image of the building on one side and a floor plan of one of the floors to the right of it. Two operators sat at the console watching the screens. They didn't even look up as Eugene and Daniel entered. Eugene continued through the room towards a glass-enclosed office, and Daniel followed him.
"Help yourself to the pot, Gene. It's fresh."
The man sitting behind the desk said, without looking away from the monitor on his desk,
"You want some coffee, Daniel?"
"Thanks, Bob,"
Gene replied, as he lifted the carafe from the heater. Inside, Daniel let out a little sigh of relief, not having to rely on his few encounters with Bob to ensure it was him.
"No, thanks, I'm good. What you need?"
Bob looked up from the monitor.
"I just wanted to meet you. I know we've met a few times, but it's been a while, and we'll probably be working together."
Daniel cocked his head to the side. "Working on what?"
"You've seen what's going on outside, and it's only getting worse. You've got to get busy on the network stuff, and that's a real problem, by the way. And I have to protect this building. We've been lucky up to this point, but the riots are getting closer and larger, more violent. If they kick off around here, I'll need everyone's help."
"Yeah, sure," Daniel replied. Then the phone on Bob's desk rang. Bob pressed the speaker button on the phone.
"Yellow.
Robert, this is Malcolm. Has Daniel arrived yet? I thought he would be here by now."
"Yes, Malcolm, he's here in my office. We were just having a little talk. I'll send him down to you."
"Thank you. Tell him to hurry. There's no time to waste."
"You just told him yourself. Goodbye, Malcolm."
Bob pressed the button again, ending the call, not waiting for Malcolm to respond. He looked up at Daniel.
"What's up his ass? Is he always so wound up?"
Not sure what to say, whether it was a setup or not, he simply replied,
"Yeah, he's a little intense."
Bob was busy typing away at his keyboard. Daniel just stood there for a moment, looking around. Gene was sitting in a chair in the corner, soaking his whiskers in the edge of a coffee cup while he blew on the hot brew.
"I guess I'll head down. Good to see you again, Bob. Or do you like to be called Robert?"
Bob looked up.
"My mother was the only person that called me Robert, and that only happened prior to a great ass whooping from my old man. No, do not call me Robert."
Bob looked back at his monitor, then back to Daniel.
"I just gave you access to the entire building. Your card will open every door on the campus. I also just added Gene's contact info to your contacts, so you can reach him if you need to."
Daniel pulled his phone from his pocket.
"How'd you get access to my contacts?"
Bob smiled.
"It's my job to know about the people that work here. Don't worry. All I did was add Gene. If you need anything, you can call either of us. Oh yeah, I added mine too."
"Just do me one favor," Gene said from behind Daniel, who turned to look at him.
Just don't need anything.
Jean's face broke into what Daniel could only imagine was a smile as the ends of the whiskers turned up slightly.
Don't worry about him, Daniel. Jean's not exactly a people person. He's more at home with the boilers than people.
I understand boilers, Jean said.
Daniel said his goodbyes and left Bob's office. He looked at the wall of monitors as he passed them and was soon in the hall again. After shutting the door, he paused there for a moment. This all seemed a little weird. Without much more thought, he headed for the elevator. The doors slid open, and he stepped into the big metal box. Daniel found Malcolm in his office. He was sitting at his desk, with his chin resting in his hands, staring at his monitor. When Daniel came in, Malcolm didn't even look up.
I'm fucked, he said, and shook his head. We are so fucked.
The language caught Daniel off guard. He had never before heard Malcolm swear, so to hear an F-bomb, too, no less, was a shock. It can't be that bad.
Oh, yeah?
Malcolm swiveled his monitor around to where Daniel could see it. The screen displayed numerous rows of numbers, big numbers, and they were counting down. It took a moment for what he was seeing to register. Daniel stood there watching as the numbers rolled down. These were huge numbers, but they were not infinite.
Is that what I think it is?
Yep. I've tried everything, and I can't stop it. We've already lost billions.
I can stop it, Daniel shouted as he bolted from the office.
He ran down the hall to the largest of the server rooms in the building. Slamming his hip into the card reader at the door, he rushed in. He headed for the rack that contained the switches that were the portal to the outside world. It took several minutes to disconnect all the fiber from the switches. Networks of this size are not like the ones at a typical home.
It isn't just one line. There are lines that connect to the internet and others that connect to a myriad of banking networks.
When everything was disconnected, Daniel wiped the sweat from his brow. Even though the room was maintained at 68 degrees, he was sweating profusely. The room was loud on a normal day, from the fans on the servers to the wall-mounted AC units that kept the room cool. There was a lot of noise. It was even louder now that all the servers were sounding their various alarms about loss of network connectivity. When he returned to Malcolm's office, he found him still sitting behind his desk, though now he looked even worse than he had previously.
What the hell did you do?
Malcolm asked, obviously confused.
I pulled all the fiber from the switches. The network's isolated now.
You did what?
Daniel reached over and spun the monitor around. The figures on the screen had stopped, and a cursor blinking in the corner was the only thing active on the screen.
Looks like it worked to me, Daniel spat back. What the hell else were we going to do?
Malcolm jumped from his chair.
We can't take the bank off the network. You know what kind of shitstorm this is going to cause? The SEC will crucify us.
Losing everything the bank has to some unknown hacker would be just as bad. Have you let anyone know about this yet? Malcolm slowly fell back into his chair, the fear that gripped him obvious on his face.
No.
Looking at the phone, sitting on his desk, he appeared to become physically ill. Taking a deep breath, he said,
I guess I need to.
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to call Bob. He needs to know what's going on. Daniel left Malcolm's office, heading for his cubicle, where he flopped into his chair. He sat there for a moment, then palmed the receiver from the phone and dialed Bob's extension.
Yes, was Bob's terse answer. Bob, do you know what's going on here?
Not entirely. Just that you guys had some trouble on the network. What's up?
Someone breached the network, and billions of dollars were siphoned off before I stopped it. At least, I think I stopped it.
There was a long pause before Bob replied.
Come up to my office.
Sure.
Daniel hung up the phone
and headed for the elevator. He was standing there waiting on the car when he remembered the little hallway that led to Bob's office. There was no other elevator, just the freight car. The ding indicating the arrival of the car sounded, and the doors opened as Daniel turned to step in. A sly smile cut Daniel's lips as he lifted his hip at the reader outside Bob's office. In the corporate culture he was part of, something as trivial as having access to a door that others didn't was something to be coveted. Now, according to Bob, he had access to the entire building. Inside, the two men were still sitting before their monitors. Daniel glanced over at the wall of videos and stopped in his tracks. The view from the hundreds of cameras routed to this office showed a truly disturbing scene.
"So what's going on?"
Bob asked over Daniel's shoulder. The question startled him, and Daniel spun around.
"What the hell's going on out there?" Daniel asked, pointing to the bank of monitors. "Looks like more of the same."
"Yeah, but it has spread around the metro and increased exponentially around Tower Place here. What the hell's going on?" Bob walked over to the console and manipulated a small joystick. A video feed that filled one entire monitor began to move. The image swung, then zoomed in to a line of police. Daniel stepped toward the monitor.
"Holy shit. Those aren't riot cops. They've got shotguns." "They probably have less than lethal rounds in them. Let's see what happens," Bob replied.
The crowd opposite the police was taunting them, throwing bottles, bricks, and anything else they could find. The police used shields to block the missiles, maintaining their line. Though the observers in the bank couldn't hear it, they could see an officer using a loudspeaker, giving orders to the crowd. The crowd responded with more bottles. Then, from somewhere deep in the crowd, came a Molotov cocktail. On the video feed, Bob and Daniel watched as the flaming bottle arched towards the line of officers. Landing in front of them, a ball of flames erupted, followed by a large cloud of smoke. The smoke obscured the crowd for a moment, but not the officers. They immediately replied with a volley of tear gas and mini beanbags fired from shotguns into the crowd. The crowd started to run, pushing and shoving to try and get away. Some people fell and were trampled by others trying to vacate the area as fast as possible.
"Oh, they're going to be pissed now," Bob said, watching the crowd as it began to break up.
"Not nearly as mad as they'll be tomorrow," Daniel replied.
Bob glanced over at him.
"Why's that?"
"Do you know that we handle EBT card transactions?"
"Nope. But what's that got to do with this?" Bob asked, pointing at the monitor.
"I had to pull our network down. Right now, there are millions of credit, debit, and yes, EBT cards that don't work."
"That was how you stopped the problem with the network? Are you nuts? You know what kind of shit that's going to start? Look at what's already happening."
Daniel looked at the monitors for a moment. Shaking his head, he asked, "What's going on?"
"Ha! Now that's the question, isn't it?" Bob replied. "What's got all these people so stirred up? You notice how all of these riots seem to start at the same time, all over the country?"
Daniel shrugged. "Yeah, but there's a lot for people to be mad about. The election got a lot of them pissed off. Then the whole gun thing. That was bound to cause trouble." Bob pointed at the monitors.
"Look at those people. Do they look like the kind of people that are pissed the government's taking their guns?"
Daniel looked at the faces on the monitors. It was a diverse crowd. Men, women, black, white, old, and young.
"Looks like a little bit of everyone, really."
Bob manipulated the joystick, bringing a group of people into focus.
"How about them?"
It was a group of young men. At least, that's what they looked like. They all had their face covered with a bandana, except for two of them who were wearing the V mask. Daniel pointed at the screen.
"I saw two people like that on my way in here."
Bob nodded.
"Those, my friend,
are professional agitators.
Huh?
Daniel asked, confused.
Look at them.
Backpacks. That one has on elbow pads, Bob said, pointing at the screen. And that one has a gas mask around his neck.
Daniel said, that doesn't really mean much. You can get that stuff anywhere.
Except that mask costs about $350.
Bob looked at Daniel.
Not exactly the kind of thing you can find in the hood.
So, who sent them here then? Daniel asked.
Bob shrugged. Don't know. You tell me.
I'll give you a hint. It's the government.
One of the guys manning the security monitors said.
Daniel looked down at the man who was still watching the cameras.
Why the hell would they do that?
Bob rubbed his chin.
Do you remember what happened in Ukraine, at Maidan?
Daniel scratched his head.
Yeah, the people gathered there to protest the government or something. They were protesting the government's decision to side with the EU and not Russia.
Oh, yeah. Then the protesters, the ones that wanted to side with Russia, started to get violent.
Bob waved a finger at Daniel.
That's what you were told.
Pointing to the group of men on the monitor, Bob continued.
What really happened was the government sending guys like these to start the trouble.
The separatists, as they're now called, simply wanted the freedom to choose, but the Ukrainian government wasn't having that.
What the hell does that have to do with us, with this? Daniel asked, pointing at the monitors.
The point is that governments, even ours, will do whatever it takes to get what they want. If that means killing a few cops, so be it, Bob said.
Daniel was shocked. You think our government is behind this? You think they would sacrifice innocent people like that?
I know they would. Now, I'm not saying this is all they're doing, but those guys you see outside are on some alphabet soup agency payroll, I guarantee it.
Shaking his head, Daniel said,
I call BS.
Bob turned and headed for his office.
Guess we'll have to wait and see who's right. Let me get a cup of coffee, and I'll show you where you can crash for the night.
Daniel followed Bob into his office. It was the picture of clutter and disorganization. The desktop was completely obscured by stacks of paper, unrecognizable pieces of dissected electronics, and more styrofoam coffee cups than should be acceptable. A large safe sat against one wall beside a well-worn couch. To Daniel, it reminded him of a dorm room. Looking around, Daniel asked,
Damn, you live in here?
Pouring a cup of coffee from a stained pot, Bob shrugged.
Sometimes.
Why do we have a place to sleep here? Placing the pot back onto the crusty burner, Bob smiled and said,
Follow me.
As he headed towards the elevator, he talked.
When this place was built, a small area was set aside as a shelter. We have the occasional winter storms and other things that can cause people to get stuck here. It was actually a good idea.
The elevator stopped, and they were once again in the basement of the bank, in the mechanical space. Daniel looked out into the cavernous space, filled with the noise of the many machines that keep such a large building functioning, and asked, Has it ever been used?
Bob laughed.
Oh yeah, it's been used, but not as a shelter, more as a love shack.
Love shack?
Daniel asked.
Yeah. Some of the muckety mucks have used it a time or two to...
Bob looked up and rubbed his chin.
How should I say it? Interview prospective young ladies.
Daniel was shocked. From what he knew of all the suits that worked in the bank, they were all stiff as a board and had no personality at all.
Really? You mean...
Daniel started to ask.
Bob smiled and said,
Want to see the video?
The image of the line of large oil paintings lining the lobby wall flashed into his mind. All those pasty-faced, balding old men. Daniel's face contorted.
Hell no!
Bob started to laugh.
Neither did I, but it keeps those fat asses in check.
Daniel followed Bob across the mechanical space to a door Bob unlocked with a physical key. Thinking that was odd, he asked Bob why the door didn't have a card reader.
"This space is designed for use during power outages and such, so a card reader wouldn't work."
Making sense, Daniel nodded and followed him in. Bob flipped a switch, and fluorescent lights flickered and came to life, revealing a large room filled with evenly spaced cots.
"Oh, this is lovely,"
Daniel said sarcastically. Bob chuckled and slapped him on the back.
"Don't worry, sport. You don't have to stay here."
And he started across the large room. Daniel shot him a look.
"Sport?"
As he walked, Bob pointed out the bathroom facilities.
"Over there are the shitters and showers."
Daniel looked over to see essentially a locker room-style shower arrangement. Sinks lined one wall with mirrors over each. The only hint of privacy was the partitions separating the toilets.
"Nice and private. I like it."
Bob grunted.
"Don't worry, champ. You don't have to stay there."
The comment irked Daniel.
"Champ?"
At the far end of the dormitory-style area was another door that they passed through. It led into a long hallway with doors off to either side. At the far end of the hall was an open door with light spilling into the dark corridor. The two walked down the hall to the open door. Bob poked his head in and pronounced,
"He's not here."
Daniel looked around Bob into the small room. These were very much like a college dorm room. A single bed sat against the wall with a small dresser and nightstand. A flat-screen TV was mounted to the wall. An open door led to the private bath. Daniel looked at the soiled bed. A large, dark area, roughly the size of a man, took up most of the sheet. Empty fast food wrappers littered the floor beside the bed, along with empty plastic 2-liter Dr. Pepper bottles. The room was a mess. Daniel looked at the TV to see the frozen image of a naked woman.
"What the hell? Is there some bum living in here?"
Bob shook his head.
"Nah, Jean stays here from time to time."
"My early opinion of Jean is quickly changing." Bob laughed, slapping Daniel on the back.
"Don't worry about Jean. He's a good guy. Pick any of these rooms. You and Jean are the only ones down here. Here's the key to the door."
Daniel pocketed the key and glanced back into the room again. "I think I'll stay down there," he said, as he headed back to the opposite end of the hall.
"It's here if you need it," Bob said.
The next day, many of the employees of the bank were turned away at the door. As the network was still down, and there was no certainty as to when it would be back up, many of them would have nothing to do. The exception was for customer service agents. In the coming days, they would face an onslaught of angry, desperate customers. There were meetings galore at the bank, not only at the bank Daniel worked for, but many others. While Daniel managed to disconnect his network from the world, the damage was already done. All those connections to the internet, other banks, and, the most damaging of all, the Federal Reserve, served to spread the virus literally at the speed of light. All over the country, and in some places around the world, banks were in full panic. In an effort to calm the panic, 2 days after the initial incident, the White House came out with a statement that all electronic financial transactions were going to be suspended. The statement went on to assure people that their accounts were backed by the federal government, and order in the financial markets would soon be restored. What it didn't say was that the real reason for the temporary halt was to stop the slide of the U.S. markets, which had already lost over 20% in the past 2 trading days. Efforts were being made to determine who was behind the event, but at the moment, it was almost a moot point, at least to most Americans. It was these Americans, the ones that, to this point, that had maintained their lives in as normal a routine as they could, and now were added to the already disgruntled masses in the streets.
most people had no way of purchasing anything. If you didn't have cash or convince a merchant to take a check, there was no way to buy. For most people, it meant that within 24 hours, they were, for all intents and purposes, broke. The frog started to notice the change in the water temp. Much to Daniel's relief, he didn't have to stay at the bank. The other side of that coin was that, unlike most other bank employees, he had to come to work. The fact that his credit cards or his debit card didn't work didn't matter that much to him. After all, he worked for the bank. And while they didn't have unlimited amounts of cash, there was a substantial amount of it securely locked up in the basement of the bank. Arrangements were made for bank employees to receive cash from their accounts over the counter. The bank doors may have been closed to the public, but they were open for those inside the banking community. Chapter 3. It was on the third day after what was now being called the financial holiday that Daniel started to have trouble. He was on his way to work when a crowd of people was blocking an intersection. They were accosting drivers as they tried to make it to their destinations. Daniel was third in line at the light when the crowd spilled out into the road. Like ants, they spread out in all directions, enveloping cars. Those unfortunate enough to be caught in the middle of the intersection suffered the worst. When they started breaking out windows and pulling people out of their cars, Daniel quickly checked the mirrors, looking for an escape. He was in the right-hand lane, a large planter separating him from a parking lot. Daniel quickly backed the van as much as he could. Those behind him were also looking for a way out. The van was big and powerful, with large bumpers on either end. Shifting into four-wheel drive, he was able to climb the planter into the parking lot. The rest of the way to the office, he never stopped again, bypassing traffic lights by using parking lots or simply running them after slowing to make sure there was no cross-traffic. The bank had taken on the appearance of a fortress. All first-story windows and doors were protected with the same kind of roll-down doors as the entrances to the parking garage. Pulling up to the garage entrance, he quickly swiped his card and waited nervously as the door rolled up. This time, he didn't park under the building. He went to the top deck, waving at the uniformed and now armed security officer stationed on the first level. He parked in a spot on the edge, looking east. It was early, and as he leaned against the wall, looking out across the area, he could see and smell acrid smoke. It was rising in several places, and the sirens, which had of late become omnipresent, seemed to be everywhere at once. The wails and warbles bounced off the buildings from all directions. From his rooftop perspective, he could see a crowd that was just coming around a corner two blocks away. It was made up of people of all types, but was just what the movies always depicted. Shouts and the sounds of breaking bottles added to all the sirens to create a morbid symphony of noise. Daniel shook his head, looking at the crowd. Then he went to the van and grabbed the messenger bag. After closing the door, he noticed that the big square cap that sealed the end of the front bumper was jutting out. He stepped towards it and gave the cap a light kick. It didn't budge, and he smiled as he headed for the stairs. A pedestrian bridge tied the building to the garage on the fourth level. He took the stairs in no real hurry and came out on the fourth deck, taking the bridge over the street below into the building. Another guard was stationed just inside the building, also uniformed and armed. At first, the appearance of uniformed men with pistols and shotguns had caused much concern amongst the mild-mannered folks working in the building. The complaints reached the point that some asked that they be kept out of sight. But as the rioting worsened around the building, the complaints disappeared. Daniel went to the little concession stand located just past the bridge. It had the usual array of items any hip suburbanite would appreciate. Starbucks coffee, bagels and pastries, and even a decent deli. He grabbed his morning Mountain Dew from the case by the register, paid using his employee ID, another nice feature of working for the bank, and headed for the elevators. According to what had become his new routine, the first stop was Bob's office. There was no real reason for him to go up there every day. It had just become the routine. He would go up there and hang out with Bob for an hour or so, watching the monitors and talking about what was happening in the world. One of the biggest benefits of this new routine was that it really pissed off Malcolm, who tried to put a stop to it. But Bob pulled rank on him, and the issue went away. Daniel flopped into a chair across from Bob's desk. The ever-present ashtray was now overflowing with butts, a ring of fine ash surrounding the tray. The principle of maximum angle of repose had been exceeded. Numerous coffee cups littered the desk as well. Some having been there so long, a brown ring showed around the bottom where coffee was soaking through. "Bob, you look like shit. When was the last time you actually slept?" Bob held up an empty cup without looking up from the monitor.
"I just finished another 2 hours."
"When was the last time you left this place?"
"And go where?"
Bob asked, as he picked up and shook the various cups.
"Home? To get some sleep?" "I should have you over someday. You'd understand."
Bob found a cup with liquid in it and swished it suspiciously.
"Guess I'll head downstairs and wallow in Malcolm's neuroses," Daniel said, as he stood up to leave. Bob looked up. "Before you go out, shut the door real quick."
Daniel pushed the door closed and looked back at Bob.
"You remember when I asked you if you had any guns?"
Bob asked, as he rocked back in his chair, putting his feet up on the desk.
"Yeah, told you I sold them all." "Yeah, bullshit, whatever. I would recommend you bring one if you've got it. Things are getting pretty shitty out there, and it may become an issue."
Daniel wanted to tell him so bad that he still had his carbine and Glock, but he just couldn't bring himself to do it yet.
"Yeah, well, I wish I did. You got any?"
Bob smiled and swung his feet off the desk with what seemed an excessive amount of enthusiasm. Standing up, he went over to the safe and dialed in the combination. Bob pulled the door open, then removed a padlock and opened an interior door. He then stepped aside to reveal the contents of the safe.
"Holy shit, Bob!"
Something resembling a smile cracked Bob's face.
"You like?"
Wide-eyed, Daniel stepped towards the safe.
"Who wouldn't? How in the hell do you still have these?"
Looking back at Bob, "Aren't you worried about getting arrested?" Bob crossed his arms over his chest and looked down at the floor. Sweeping the toe of his shoe, in desperate need of a shine, across the stained carpet, he replied,
"Well, there's an exemption for law enforcement."
A little confused, Daniel asked, "You still a cop?"
"Retired," Bob replied, before flashing another smile.
"And it applies to you as well?"
"Membership has its benefits, don't you know?"
Turning back to the safe, Daniel began to take a closer look.
"What kind of ARs are those?"
"There are 3 Patriot Ordnance Warhogs, 2 Mossberg 500s, and a few SIGs, plus enough ammo to feed them for a while."
"Damn, that's a hell of a collection," Daniel replied, shaking his head.
"That's not my collection. My collection wouldn't fit in that safe."
Daniel stood there, stunned for a moment. Before he could say anything, a voice from the control room called out,
"Hey, Bob, you need to come see this."
Daniel and Bob walked out to the dark room, illuminated only by the wall of monitors.
"What's up, Andy?"
Bob asked as they came in. One video feed suddenly filled the entire wall. It was a view of the street in front of the bank that was filling with people. It was obvious these people were pissed, the epitome of a riot in its infancy. The camera panned back and forth, taking in the whole street. Off in the distance, they could see fires, dumpster fires, from the look of it. The crowd farther out was larger, and it looked as though it was moving to the business district.
"Damn, this isn't good," Bob said to no one in particular.
"What you want to do?" Andy asked.
"Nothing, just watch it. I'm going to talk to the brass," Bob said as he headed for the door. "Daniel, come with me."
The request caught him off guard.
"Sure,"
was all he replied, taking one more look at the screen as he turned to follow Bob out of the office. Waiting in front of the elevator, Daniel asked,
"Where are we going?" "I'm going to talk to the execs. I want to shut the building down today and call off the staff before any more of them get in."
"You think it's going to get that bad?"
"I hope not, but I'd rather not have a couple hundred people here to worry about if it does." "Why am I coming with you?"
That shady smile cracked Bob's face again.
"Spread your social circle. Meet some interesting people."
The ding announced the elevator and the door opened. Jean was standing in the car behind a cart, eating a sandwich with his right hand, a rubber glove on his left. Daniel noticed the cart was loaded with all manner of apparatus for unclogging toilets. Daniel took another look at Jean, the mustache moving up and down, then the sandwich.
"Hey, Jean, how you doing?"
Bob asked as they stepped in. Swallowing a mouthful, he replied,
"Same old shit."
Bob laughed, looking down at the cart.
"So it seems. I don't know why these prim and proper ladies insist on flushing their damn harpoons down the toilet,"
Jean said as he stuffed the last bite of the sandwich in his mouth.
"Harpoons! Never heard them called that before," Bob replied with a laugh.
Jean just shrugged his shoulders, pulled a comb from his shirt pocket, and ran it through his mustache. Replacing the comb in his pocket, he pulled the rubber glove back on his left hand.
"What are y'all up to?" "Going up to talk to the brass. We may need to shut the building down. Looks like there's a riot brewing." "Good. I hope they do. I could use a break."
The car stopped, and Bob told Jean he would talk to him later. Daniel nodded at Jean as he stepped off the elevator. Once the door shut, Daniel looked over at Bob.
"I can't believe he was eating a sandwich after plunging a toilet."
Bob laughed.
"Yeah, that's Jean. He's a real piece of work."
Daniel's face turned sour.
"That's just friggin' nasty."
Bob let out a loud laugh, slapping Daniel on the back. They came to a door at the end of the corridor, and Bob went through it, with Daniel following. They stepped out into an opulent sitting area, nothing like the part of the building he worked in.
"Holy shit, where are we?"
Daniel asked. They were walking towards a large, mahogany desk, where a very attractive blonde was seated.
"Welcome to the Den of the Beast. You smell that?"
Daniel looked around. "Smell what?"